HIV isn't a death sentence anymore. People can live long lives with the virus in their bodies, well, as long as they have the right combination of drugs. But some researchers aren't satisfied with that. They want to take the fight against HIV and AIDS even further. On this episode of the Oxford Sparks Big Questions podcast, we are asking, can you cure HIV? Hello, I'm Emily Elias, and this is the show where we seek out the brightest minds at the University of Oxford, and we get them to weigh in on those tricky questions. And for this episode, we are headed to a rainy garden in Oxford to meet a man who is working on this specific tricky question.
So my name is John Frater, and I work at the Nuffield Department of Medicine, and my research is around how we're going to find a cure for HIV infection. And, you know, it's that last sort of holy grail, if you like, in the world of HIV, which has been a sort of this massive race for the last 30 years of finding new drugs and finding new treatments or finding a vaccine. And at the end, you know, the cure is the one thing that everybody wants, but it's probably going to be the hardest.
John has spent the majority of his career trying to figure out HIV. When you consider that this infection came on the radar like 30 years ago, doctors and researchers have come a long way.
There was a lot of ignorance around what HIV was. People didn't really know what it was. They didn't understand it. There was this concern that if you know, you ever had sex again, you would die. That was inevitable because this thing was just going to sweep through the whole nation and wipe everybody out. So people were getting hysterical about this. There was a lot of governmental driven campaigns, and there were leaflets put through all the doors in the UK of every household saying, don't die of ignorance about HIV. There were these amazing advertising campaigns that took place on the TV, showing gravestones collapsing to the ground and white lilies being thrown on top of them. You know, it was all doom and gloom, saying,
there is now a danger that has become a threat to us all. It is a deadly disease and there is no known cure. If you ignore AIDS, it could be the death of you. So don't die of ignorance.
And there were lots of publicity campaigns around, you know, making people aware of HIV, but still, even then, we didn't know how to treat it. We didn't really know how infectious it was. And so people were really worried and really anxious. In the mid-90s, I was lucky enough to be a junior doctor working at St. Mary's Hospital in the centre of London, which was one of the main places treating HIV back then. And it was just by chance, it was a rotation I was doing. And they had two wards, 23, I think it was, beds on each ward, so, you know, over 40 beds, and we were full all the time of people my age with this condition that we didn't really understand. Some of them would die, and some of them we could get better and send home. It was more of this theme of, it was young men in their 20s who you looked at and you say, you could be me, you know. And I think so many medical conditions, especially when you're kind of training as a medical student, you're dealing with kind of older people, you know, because, you know, obviously most conditions affect older people, as we'll get more unwell when we get older. But these were young people who you wouldn't expect to be unwell. So I just remember kind of a whole host of young people who were sort of surprised and frightened by what was going on. But at that point, it was just this moment of thinking, this is something really important, and I want to be part of this. And it's not often in medicine that a new condition comes along and that you can be part of it and right there at the beginning. And so this felt important and it felt big, but it also felt like the things were changing rapidly and we were going to be able to do something useful to find out. So, you know, it was that combination of being able to provide, you know, clinical care, as well as thinking there's some really interesting research opportunities to sort of, you know, see how we can take what we understand and sort of improve on it.
John says the big breakthrough in HIV treatment came in 1996 in the form of the triple cocktail. All of a sudden, people were seeing their symptoms come under control and they were managing the spread of the disease.
This fear that this was a death sentence, if you're told you're HIV positive. And I remember telling people, you know, in the 90s that they're HIV positive, and that look in their face that, you know, well, that's it then, isn't it? You know, I'm in my 20s and, you know, I've got to get everything in order. To now, when if I diagnose someone newly infected, you know, tomorrow, and we start them on therapy very quickly, they're life expectancy is, by all the evidence we have, certainly the same as someone who is HIV negative. And there are some crazy studies that suggest it might even be longer, because as a young person you're seeing a doctor two or three times a year who checks your blood pressure and your cholesterol and all these other things, and so you're getting a regular health check from an early age, so it might be beneficial. I think the one thing that hasn't really changed is the issues around stigma. And I think people are very reluctant to talk about their HIV status. There's a lot of fear around being judged. I mean, someone summed it up to me. They said, if you tell someone you've got cancer, they'll give you a hug. If you tell someone you've got HIV, they take a step back.
John divides his time between his clinical work and research. And when I say that he's working towards curing HIV, I genuinely mean a cure. I mean, he's not looking at finding the right pill that you can take every day for the rest of your life, but actually figuring out how to fully eradicate the infection from a patient.
There are lots of very good scientists who says that anyone who tries to cure HIV is wasting their time because it can't be done. And there are quite a few sort of foolish optimists like me and my colleagues who think it's worth trying, because you never quite know what's around the corner and what's going to turn up. So it's a massive effort. There are also issues around the ethics of it, because yes, HIV isn't curable, but people are well. And if the cure has side effects or is dangerous in itself or could harm somebody, what risk is it fair to impose on someone in order to achieve that cure, if you are going to live a normal, healthy life otherwise, as long as you take your tablets? I mean, I think it's in some conditions which might be terminal, you know, it's a different area, because if someone is unwell and they can't be treated, you'll try anything to try and help them. For our patients who are well, generally, to say, I've got a really toxic drug that might cure you, do you want to risk taking that? It raises a whole ethical issue around kind of how far can we go in research to try and help and make a difference.
Only one person has ever been fully cured of HIV. His name is Timothy Ray Brown. Timothy was HIV positive, and he also had an aggressive form of leukemia. In 2007, his doctors made a calculated decision. They were going to use radiation and chemotherapy to wipe out his immune system, and then they were going to use donated stem cells to rebuild it. But they made sure those stem cells came from a donor that carried a gene that was immune to HIV.
There are some people who are actually resistant to HIV because they contain a mutation that isn't harmful. And he had a transplant with these cells. These cells then grew out in his body, and the HIV had nowhere to go, and he became HIV negative and is currently living HIV negative and as well. But stem cell transplants are incredibly risky. You wouldn't certainly do it to somebody who didn't need it, and it's been tried on a number of other people, and many of whom have not survived the process or died because of their other condition, in many cases a cancer of some form. But there's still a lot of interest in, can this be replicated in a non-dangerous way, potentially through sort of new genetic therapies? And you may have heard of things like CRISPR and Cas9, which are these amazing new gene editing techniques, which are sort of the stuff of science fiction, where you can kind of go in and you can edit the genes and make them behave in different ways. And the question is, can we apply that in real life to real conditions? And you know, it's too early probably to say yes, but certainly that's a very exciting direction that some people are going.
But there are lots of researchers out there looking at different ideas to see if they can try and find a safe and effective cure. John and his team have been working on a clinical trial called KICK and KILL. In it, they give one drug to activate all the sleeping HIV that is in a patient's body. And then once all the HIV is woken up, they target it and try and kill it.
So if we can kick these cells into life, make them wake up and show their HIV, then the kill process is to come in with either a vaccine or some other form of killing therapy, whether they're sort of activated T cells or these immune cells, something like that, to try and target that HIV. And so we've just completed a clinical trial of this, and the results will be available in a few months. And other groups are looking at it as well. So there are different sort of concepts that are currently being tested. But as yet, there is nothing out there, but that doesn't mean there won't be in the future.
But in the meantime, while John and his fellow researchers work towards a breakthrough, there is one element of the disease that he wants to fight right now, and that is stigma. To do this, he is building a garden at this year's Chelsea Flower Show to show what children and teens with HIV face as they try to navigate their diagnosis.
The garden, it starts off on the left-hand side with a big white marble pod, a circular pod. It's about 8 foot across, 8 foot wide, and this represents a cocoon of safety. This is the clinic. This is the NHS, where you are surrounded by people who understand you. They've given you a diagnosis, which is difficult and awkward and uncomfortable, but they're helping you manage that. They're helping you understand how it's going to be treated. And surrounding this big white pod, there is planting that is quite organized. It's not particularly colorful, but it's organized and secure and safe, quite green and quite white. And this is an area where you can feel safe, but you know, the real world is out there. And to get to the real world, in the garden terms, you move down a path, but the path has brick walls that are collapsing into it, broken brick. So it's really difficult to walk down the path, but this is the journey that you need to take. And as you walk down the path and you sort of work your way round these brick walls, you end up in an open space with a large semicircular, beautiful stone bench, which is surrounded by open planting, colours, trees, bushes, a place of sort of openness and freedom. And that bench, on the back of the bench, there's a metal grating of the imprints of hands of young people who are living with HIV as a representation that this is all about them. So it's that journey that you take, you know, from the cocoon of the NHS, but actually sort of you've got to go out on your own in the end. But you're trying to get to a place where you feel comfortable and happy.
I think it's fair to say that when John was working on the ward at St. Mary's in the 90s, the thought of a cure probably seemed completely out of reach. But with so many changes in HIV treatment over the past 30 years, it might not be as far-fetched as once thought.
I think any research will tell you, there's a lot of hard yards in this. And it's that sort of, it's the minimal gains versus the giant leap forward type approach to life. I mean, a lot of what we do is minimal gains. You're sort of chipping away at something. And it's about stamina and persistence and keeping going when everyone tells you you're an idiot and this is never going to happen, versus that moment when sort of something amazing happens and you get that giant leap forward. But you're working for that, and you're working to see, you know, will you achieve something one day? But my experience, nothing happens quickly anymore. And so I wouldn't say there's an excitement. It's just a sort of, the embers are still glowing, put it that way. You know, you're doing something that is interesting and you want to keep doing.
This podcast was brought to you by Oxford Sparks from the University of Oxford, with music by John Lyons and additional music by Lee Rosevere. And a special thanks to Dr. John Frater. If you happen to be in the area of the Chelsea Flower Show, why not go check out the awesome garden that they've put together to help show what it's like for kids living with a diagnosis of HIV? It's beautiful. Tell us what you think about this podcast. You can go to Twitter and tweet us at Oxford Sparks. You can find us on Facebook. And we've got a lot of other cool stuff on the website, oxfordsparks.ox.ac.uk. And if you happen to like this podcast and you made it all the way to the credits, why not take the extra step, write us a review. It helps other people find this awesome show that you enjoy so much. I'm Emily Elias. Bye for now.